Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Taylor Velasquez. New Mexico has made some strides when it comes to protecting patients from surprise medical bills and aggressive debt collectors. In 2019, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham signed the Surprise Billing Protection Act into law. The act aims to eliminate expensive bills when a patient receives care by an out-of-network or hospital or provider. The patient is expected to only pay the amount they would be charged if receiving care within their network. Another law from 2021, the Patients Debt Collection Act, Protection Act, would stop hospitals from using aggressive debt collectors to go after those with lower incomes, either by taking them to court or reporting to their creditors. These problems are exacerbated by New Mexico's population of uninsured patients, leading hospitals to potentially overcharge them for services, and patients on Medicaid are still walking away with massive bills. This morning, we'll discuss these laws' impact, how medical billing works, and how to deal with medical bills if you're struggling financially. What is your experience with medical bills? Have you found them to be higher than expected or hard to understand? Email letstalk@kunm.org or call in live now at 505-277-5866. My first guest this hour is Melissa Barbara. Melissa emailed the Let's Talk team earlier this week to share her experience receiving a surprise medical bill. She was kind enough to join us live today. Welcome to the show, Melissa. It's great to have you join us this morning.
Great. Thanks for letting me be here today.
I know I mentioned you shared a long email about your surprise medical bill. So can you just share what that experience was and what led to that bill coming through?
Sure. This happened probably a few months ago. I was at my OBGYN's office, which is a satellite clinic associated with one of the hospitals here in Santa Fe. I was there just for an annual routine visit. And, you know, as normally happens after some small talk, my doctor asked me, hey, you know, is there anything going on? Anything, you know, you want to talk about? You know, and I mentioned being very vulnerable that, you know, I said, hey, I might have some, you know, lingering symptoms of a yeast infection, and which, as any woman knows, it's a very common condition to have. And so she said, hey, well, you know, you're here for your normal well woman's exam. So let's just, you know, check it out and take a test and do a little swab and see if there's anything going on. And I said, sure, that sounds great. And it was really as simple as that. A swab later. You know, had that done, resumed the small talk, and walked out of the office. A few days later, I got some negative results and nothing to worry about. So at least that's what I thought. A few weeks later, I did get a bill in the mail from the hospital for a little over $1,000. And when I looked closer, the total bill, including the office visit that was factored in, is probably more like $1,500. So my insurance did pay a few hundred dollars, but I'm responsible for the other thousand or so. And, you know, naturally I was concerned and shocked, really. I didn't know what I had done that resulted in that amount of money. So I reached back out to the office and kind of was given the runaround and on why it was so much. And they said, hey, you know, call the hospital billing department because this is really an insurance issue and it doesn't go through our clinic anyways, call them. So, and I started the long journey of making phone calls and talking to people. So called the hospital department and they said, well, yeah, your insurance just doesn't cover it. Call your insurance. So I called the insurance and they said, basically, nope, the lab tests you had done aren't covered and you haven't reached your deductible anyways. So at this point, I was kind of frustrated and, you know, I started to probably tell the patient advocate, as they're called at the insurance company, a little bit more than I probably should have, but I kind of just pleaded my case and said, you know, it just sort of happened. I was in conversation with my doctor. They didn't tell me that this was going to be an additional charge. I didn't know how much it was going to be. I didn't have the opportunity to check to see if it was covered. You know, is there anything I could do? And he said, hey, you know, just write down exactly what you told me. Let's make an appeal to the claim and it'll get reviewed and see if that makes a difference. So I did. And in the meantime, I tried to get clarification on from the office on why those specific codes were used and what they meant. And no one at the office had returned my call or answered my emails still. So I submitted the appeal, lost the appeal, and it was just determined that I still wasn't covered. So I just made my second payment on my bill just a few days ago.
And once you got over that initial shock of receiving that bill, when you read through that bill, was it clear what services was being billed for? Did you understand anything that was on that bill? I know you mentioned there were some codes, but what was that like reading through it?
Yeah, you know, you kind of get this explanation of benefit, you know, letter that comes through the mail. And I saw the codes that were on there. And, you know, a little bit of my background, I'm in dental healthcare. I'm a dental hygienist. So I have some experience kind of understanding codes and submitting codes and doing procedures. So I'm not unfamiliar with it. But there's no explanation on the bill or the codes, what that code actually means. So you kind of have to do a little bit of research. And I still wasn't able to determine what exactly those codes mean and why they were billed out. And so it is a bit confusing. And what is my responsibility, why and how come is not really explained. It just says, here you go, this is what you have to do.
And I think, like you, a lot of people who would want to run tests if their doctor suggested it during the appointment, or they're there for one reason, but something has been cropping up in their health and they're like, well, I'm here, I might as well do the test, get the subsequent treatment. So what do you wish was different with the communication, either from the doctor or staff about billing, that would have been helpful to you at the time of your appointment?
Yeah, so I kind of been thinking about this. And again, kind of because I'm familiar with being with patients and working with patients and doing procedures, anytime you have a patient in the chair, you know, they're there for one reason. And if something happens in the appointment in which another procedure is going to be done, or you offer them an additional service or change the service, it is our responsibility as healthcare providers to inform our patient, hey, this is what's happening. And I know from my own experience working with patients that if a patient's in my chair and the doctor comes in and says, hey, we've got time in our schedule, do you want to do this crown? Do you want to get that cavity filled? More than likely, it's going to be me as the hygienist going up to the front desk and telling the front desk, hey, patient so-and-so is going to get this done. We better let them know because our office is expecting, you know, payment at the time of service. So I certainly don't want our patients to walk out and have a surprise $800 bill by the time they walk up to the front of the office. That's going to be a very unhappy patient, and it ruins my relationship with my patient and their relationship to me. And so in this case, I think about that in my healthcare provider. I really feel like I got great treatment there. I wasn't concerned about that. I think she made the right choice, and had my results been something different, maybe I would have felt differently about it. But I think the responsibility as a healthcare provider is even to disclose, hey, I don't know if this is going to be an additional charge. And the onus on me to also know I'm familiar with this system. And even then I wasn't able to successfully navigate it. And I feel a little hurt about that. And if I have this experience and have this background, what about someone else who doesn't have the knowledge that I do working in healthcare? So I think it does bring to light, what is our process as healthcare providers? How much responsibility does the office have? How much responsibility does the system have, like the hospital? You know, and how can we all come together to make this a better experience?
And I know you said earlier that you just made another payment on this pretty hefty bill that you received. And what was that experience like, figuring out payment plans? Did you have the support of figuring out, well, this is what this looks like to pay this off within a certain time, to let the hospital know that this was going to be happening? What was that experience like?
You know, it's kind of funny because it took me a lot, and I still don't have information that I'd like to have, like why exactly are those codes being used? But once the bill came due, and of course everything's digital now, you log into your patient portal, man, it was just a simple click away to set up a payment and do a payment plan. They certainly made that easy, but to get information about why the codes were used and what exactly, you know, involved in my treatment, that's not as clear. So I think the priority is a little bit skewed here on how come I can't get the information I need, but they can certainly set me up for a payment plan real fast. And I don't need to talk to anybody to get that kind of information. So, yeah, that's the choice I made. And thankfully, I'm in a financial position that this isn't really going to, not going to break the bank, but it doesn't come at a great time. You know, it's, you know, I just closed on a house 6 months ago. So, you know, paying $1,000 is not in my budget at this time right now. So I'm just going to keep making my payments and, I don't know, see what happens from there.
I would actually like to introduce my next guest this hour, Pamela Blackwell, who's the Director of Government Relations and Communications at the New Mexico Hospital Association. Good morning, Pamela. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
We just heard from Melissa about the bill she received for a service that seems pretty simple. What is the process of billing and coding and everything that Melissa is very confused about?
Melissa, thank you for your story. I think all of us, including myself, have experienced, had similar experiences. So what happens when, as far as patients for a hospital, I can't speak for all of the different facilities, but when a patient comes to the hospital, first of all, if you're coming to the emergency department, you cannot ask them what kind of coverage they have or how they want to pay for the service. The first and foremost thing is to take care of that patient in the emergency department. Not just by law, but that's something that hospitals are proud of being able to do. You take patients as they come regardless. In a situation that is not an emergency, and then eventually once a patient is stabilized, the process is fairly easy if you have insurance, whether it's commercial insurance, Medicaid or Medicare, or you are someone that just self-pays and that's just part of how you pay for your healthcare. There are also other options, including county indigent funds. So if you don't have coverage, each county has a good chunk of money to help cover the costs of care for the residents in that county. And then there's also hospital financial assistance programs. And through all of this, I think as Melissa spoke to, there are folks, they're financial assistance advocates, and they are trained in all of these complexities, but also in bringing out and talking to patients, because it can be a very sensitive issue talking about your finances, and people are already vulnerable when they're there. These financial assistance advocates and patient advocates help talk through these options that also include their hospital assistance programs. So for those, you can be, for example, within 200 to 400% of the federal poverty level. And then there's a sliding scale in which the hospital will cover all of it because you're within that range. You just can't cover it in that FPL area. And then there's a sliding scale in which, depending on where you are, much of it can be covered and just part of it is cash payment. So they really do like to work with you on that. Hospitals are very motivated to have patients have coverage. And that coverage means access to them, not just for the hospital, but once hospitals are able to find coverage for their patients, that means those patients have coverage in their primary care setting and other settings, which in turn will prevent them from having those emergencies and those more serious health conditions that lead them to the hospital in the first place. Key to that is patient participation in the process. And Melissa is a good example of that. And though it does not, it is always complicated, she's a really good example of asking, like, what are my other options? Patients, again, aren't always as confident in asking those questions. And so it's really important for patients to know that they do have the right to ask those questions and to ask for assistance, and not be shy about sharing, hey, this is tough. I cannot cover this, and participate in that process with the advocates.
And we're going to pause the conversation right there. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Taylor Velasquez. We're talking about the medical billing process. We'll be back in a moment.
The New Mexico Poison Center at UNM Health answers questions about substance abuse and overdose, including where to go for help personally or for a loved one. Details at 1-800-222-1222. Proud to serve all New Mexicans and proud to support KUNM.
Member support helps KUNM keep our entire community informed and connected with trustworthy news, community conversations, and inspiring music. KUNM is committed to being your source for vital programming that is meaningful to you. Thank you. Your support makes it all possible.
Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Robinson, author of More Love, Less Conflict. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about how you can use simple communication methods to create more love in your life.
Saturday mornings at 6 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Taylor Velasquez. Next week, we'll be discussing public safety and how to address the growing violence. Today, however, we're talking about medical billing. Have you ever postponed receiving care because of the price of a service? Give us a call at 505-277-5866 and let us know. And I would like to return to our guest, Pamela Blackwell with the New Mexico Hospital Association. Pamela, a report prepared by our for the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty, who's also a guest this hour, and we'll get to them here in a minute, shows that uninsured patients are frequently charged more than people who have commercial or government health plans for the same services. We put a link to that report on our website for our listeners, but Pamela, can you speak to why those rates are higher?
I'm not able to answer how prices are set. That's something that has to be done, that's done through the hospitals and with insurers. And there's a number of reasons, legal and otherwise, why that's not something that we collect with the hospital association. I will say that there are a number of factors that go into setting prices. Just because you set a price, though, does not mean you receive that. So hospitals are price takers, not price setters. So for example, if you go to a restaurant and you order your favorite dish, you know what it costs and you pay that amount. Now, the restaurant doesn't say, hey, we'd like to charge you $10 for this. And then how it works with hospitals is that then they say, then you decide, no, I'm only going to pay $6. So that's what happens between the hospital insurance companies, is prices might be set, but that is not necessarily what you receive back. And most of the time, particularly with Medicaid, it does not cover the whole cost of services. So when you look at the cost of services and whether price is set or what you receive in payment, there's a lot of factors. For example, for rural hospitals, many times some of those costs are more expensive because it does cost more to recruit and retain a physician in a rural setting. It takes more to have more equipment that always has to be ready for you. Larger hospitals, urban hospitals, have some economies of scale benefits. So sometimes those cost differentials are really different because of rural versus an urban setting. And New Mexico has a very rural setting, for example. Hospitals have to negotiate with insurance on trying to set the best rates to cover costs, but also to reflect the community that they're serving as well.
And I just want to clarify that for a minute. So are you saying that insurers and Medicaid set the prices by what they're willing to pay?
Yes. Okay.
And I know sometimes hospitals can give discount rates. So are you saying that patients who may be uninsured can call their hospital network and maybe negotiate? I'm just asking for people who may have a bill and they're like, well, maybe I can negotiate on my end.
That's exactly right. The patient advocates that I talked about before, that's exactly what they're there for, is to help you through that process, because there is that sliding scale. There are financial options in addition to county indigent funds and other sources.
And I would like to introduce my next guest this hour, Erica Sanchez, healthcare director at the Center on Law and Poverty. Good morning, Erica. Thanks for joining the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And Erica, the system Pamela described sounds similar to negotiating a purchase for a car, where buyer beware is the mindset going in. Has healthcare in the United States always been like that?
I think that we have had a kind of complicated piecemeal healthcare system across the country for a long time.
And Pamela, does the hospital association take a position on whether patients are best served for-profit or nonprofit models, or who the owners are? I'm thinking of private equity in particular.
For the hospital association, the most important thing on our minds is access to care. And whether, no matter who the hospital is, whether there are private investors or it's nonprofit or government owned, all of them serve Medicaid, Medicare, all of the different patients. So really that is the most important aspect of that. And the people in those hospitals who provide that care are local people as well. They get their own care from those hospitals. So I as far as that goes, I think it's important to be pretty agnostic about where the ownership comes from. The most important thing is getting good quality access to care.
And Erica, I want to follow up on this question with you too. Does the center have any guidelines, or are you guys advocating for maybe patients to be served by nonprofit models, for profit? What's that stance for you all?
Where we're focused right now is on increasing access to affordable health care for all New Mexicans. So we are really looking to, you know, like we were talking about, the healthcare system as a patchwork of plans, providers, costs that leave people frustrated and feeling powerless. And so we're working towards a model that's called Medicaid Forward, which would extend affordable coverage to all New Mexicans by opening up the Medicaid program and allowing people to access this trustworthy program in the state.
And Erica, I think many people are in a similar situation as Melissa, who we heard from earlier. And I just wanted, from your perspective, were there any patient rights possibly violated in Melissa's story? I think Pamela said earlier that hospitals have responsibilities, but also patients also have responsibilities.
So there are currently a few different laws that can help protect patients, but we know that they don't go far enough. Like you mentioned, there's the Surprise Billing Protection Act, and not knowing enough about the details of Melissa's story, I don't know that that would even apply here. We also have the Patients Debt Collection Protection Act, which protects low-income people from debt collection for their medical debt. And this requires hospitals and other medical providers to support patients in understanding whether they qualify for different programs like Medicaid or financial assistance through a hospital or indigent care, like Pamela mentioned. And then the hospitals, for these uninsured patients who are under a certain income level, the hospitals are supposed to support them in applying for those programs if they want that support. Hospitals and providers are also required to check if you have low income before suing you or sending you to collections. And if at any point a patient is under that income level during that collections process, or while they're on a payment plan, they can tell the billing department, or if it's been transferred to a collection agency, that they have a low income and they cannot be sued or sent to collections. So there are some protections for some patients, but we know that not all entities are proactively providing those patients with their rights. So it's very important that patients are aware, even though these facilities do have a legal obligation to do these things.
And Pamela, you look like you have some thoughts. Can you share what you're thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. Supportive of what Erica was just saying. From our hospital standpoint, the Patient Debt Collection Act has actually been quite successful and worked really well. And from our perspective, it's really improved the participation by patients and their families in getting coverage. That's been a really good thing for the patients and their health outcomes. If you have coverage and you have some financial stability, that actually does mean that you're more likely to have better health outcomes as well. So, in fact, we benefited from Center for Law and Poverty a year ago. They did an education session for our annual meeting of our members to talk about the Patient Debt Collection Act and how to comply with it, how to implement it, and use some of the best practices that some of our hospitals had already been using as well. We've been very supportive of that. And of course, of the surprise billing law as well, we've been supportive of that from a federal and a state standpoint.
And I want to go back to some of the points Melissa shared in her story. Erica, is it a law that hospitals or clinics have to communicate with folks about additional charges for care that comes up during a visit? Or do you think that's something that's still missing from the puzzle?
I think there's always room for improvement there. There are some things that need to be included on medical bills, like the date you received care, whether you have insurance, if the insurance was billed, the amount you owe, and whether the facility checked whether you qualify for those programs. So some of those things are in place, but we know that it is not sufficient, and we know that this is a really complex system that people are dealing with, usually in really hard times during their life. So we really need a simplified system that really supports patients and helps facilitate them accessing healthcare.
And we just went over a couple of the recent laws that were passed, but can you explain what other rights patients have when maybe walking into their hospital or clinic, and then maybe the rights they have post that visit?
Yeah, so as I said, hospitals, urgent care, other clinics must be checking if patients are uninsured, and if they are uninsured, whether they qualify for programs, and then assisting them with accessing those programs. They cannot be sending any patient to collections without verifying their income and whether they qualify for the debt collection protections under law.
And Pamela, I just want to make sure this is well understood by our listeners, because like everyone in the chat in the room this morning has discussed, this is a confusing system. But does the Patient's Debt Collection Protection Act mean hospitals can't sue over unpaid medical bills?
I don't know that that's what it means. It means that there is a long process, understanding that it's complicated, that humans need care, that they need assistance in this area. So hospitals are going to do their best to get the information. Like I said, they're highly motivated from a health standpoint, but also from just at least getting something to cover some of the costs of services that they've provided. But hospitals can't assume someone is eligible or not. Now, once you go down a certain path, many times those costs, if there's not something determinative, is written off, meaning the cost, the hospital assumes all of the cost of that care and, you know, swallows that whole. And so that's very often what happens in many of these cases, where you're not quite sure where that person has landed and they haven't necessarily participated as much in the process.
Right. And I know you've mentioned a couple of times this morning indigent care funds that hospitals receive from state and county governments to cover medical bills that patients with low incomes can't pay. What's the average amount that's given to hospitals, and is that enough?
I don't have the exact numbers on what's given to each hospital, because it depends on the county. It depends on the size of the hospital. So that's something that I can follow up with you on if that's information you want to share with your audience at another time.
And just to talk a little bit more, can a hospital turn someone away for being uninsured or being insured through programs like Medicaid and Medicare?
No. I mean, you cannot, absolutely not. That's through EMTALA, is a federal law, which is a very good thing for everyone to have. And so hospitals do not turn anyone away. They cannot turn anyone away, regardless of ability to pay.
Right.
They have a responsibility to stabilize that patient.
And it sounds like sometimes hospitals are taking on some of the financial burden when patients can't pay. They still have to pay operating costs. They have to pay their employees. Like you said, physician and nurses recruitment is something that the state is really having a challenge with, as we've seen in the recent years. So what is the burden on hospitals when it comes to those unpaid medical bills? And maybe what are the long-term challenges that you're hearing from these networks?
Yes, there is a burden of unpaid medical bills. I would say the even larger burden is when costs are not covered. So Medicaid historically has not covered the cost of care, would cover maybe 80% of the cost of care. And that means that you don't have enough money to pour back into your workforce, into your equipment, into your buildings, into your infrastructure, into all the things that are there when you need it for a hospital. We were in this last legislative session, we were successful in passing a law called the Healthcare Delivery and Access Act. And what that did was hospitals are very much strained financially. And so they were willing to put in money into the Medicaid match program. So hospitals agreed basically to tax themselves to increase what is the Medicaid match, to bring those dollars back to New Mexico. And then those dollars will help to increase the cost of Medicaid, or not the cost, increase the reimbursement or payment for services for Medicaid patients. Half of our state is on Medicaid. So that is a significant mix that if you aren't paid at cost, your hospital cannot continue to grow and increase access to care. So again, hospitals agreed to tax themselves to bring down the federal dollars to help support hospitals. This is not, and actually supporting hospitals and rural hospitals actually benefit even more than urban hospitals. This will not go into effect until 2025. So we're currently working with CMS to implement this law that was passed. So we're very much looking forward to this. Does not backfill what hasn't been paid in the past, but we are very much looking forward to what this means for the future for access to care.
And I think to your point, I want to talk a little bit more about the Patients' Debt Collection Protection Act. I know that passed in 2021, and there were some issues with some lawsuits being filed, and I think people need to maybe have some clarification around if this bill covers retroactive debt, what debt does it actually collect on, what are the little, I guess, details of that bill?
Oh, sure. And this is part of the joy of how a bill becomes a law. So you pass a law, and once it's signed, it doesn't necessarily mean it's enacted. There's an effective date in which it becomes enacted. Then you have rules and regulations that take time to occur also. So, for example, Patient Debt Collection Act passed, and we were supportive of it, but it did not go into effect until 2023. So those cases in which patients felt that they should have been covered by the Patient Debt Collection Act, some of those were before that actual effective date. So that bill is not retroactive. It's also from that. It's only from that that 2023 date moving forward. I think some of those have, most of them that we know of, have worked through the system. But I think that was some of the concern and at the time when they weren't sure of what that effective date was.
Great. And we're going to pause the conversation right there. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. We're talking about understanding medical billing. I'm Taylor Velasquez. We'll be back in a minute.
These are the poetic tone pictures by Antonin Dvorak. And this is pianist Leif Ove Andsnes.
Oh, these pieces surprise me constantly, the potency of it and the immediate attraction to the audience.
Leifova Ansnes plays Dvorak on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Is this heat too much for that old engine? If your old car or truck just can't take it anymore, if it keeps letting you down, send it up to a higher purpose. KUNM's vehicle donation program turns old cars and trucks into a membership, plus a tax deduction for you. And it's an important way to help keep great radio happening at KUNM. Condition doesn't matter, as long as it has an engine. It just takes one phone call to 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. We're discussing confusing medical bills and financial assistance that may be available. And there's still some time to call in today. So have you ever received help paying for your medical bills from a hospital or a clinic? Call us at 505-277-5866. Or you can still shoot us an email at letstalk@kunm.org to let us know whether the process was difficult. Was it helpful? Give us all that experience. I would like to return back to our original guest this morning, Melissa Barbara. Listening to this conversation so far this morning, has it cleared any questions that you had about the medical system? Would this stuff be helpful for people to know generally going into getting healthcare?
Yes, I would say that this conversation has actually been very insightful, and I appreciate the other guests who have been on sharing their perspectives about, you know, how medical billing works and insurance works. I think it's been offered me some perspectives moving forward. And, you know, as everyone was talking, I was kind of thinking about my end as a patient, and I will be honest and say part of me after this experience has felt like, you know, I don't know if I want to go back. I don't know if I want to see this doctor, go back to that clinic. And I, again, understanding being a healthcare provider myself, I'm like, that's not the position I want to take. But I do know, as any healthcare provider, our first oath is do no harm to patients. And while nothing horrible happened during my appointment, I felt like I got good care. I feel like I was harmed. I was harmed financially and psychologically because of the supplies and what I now have to be on the hook for. But I certainly don't want this encounter to prevent me from seeking some of the care that I need. I think my responsibility, and anyone else listening to this, is to still show up for ourselves in our preventive care, because I don't want to seek care when something is horribly wrong or I need to be in an emergency situation. And that's why I will continue to show up and be vulnerable and disclose my, you know, whatever else may be going on during my contact with my physicians. And, you know, and I think that's our responsibility as patients. And again, understanding kind of some of these pieces that all come together, it's helpful so all of us can show up, including the medical staff, the, you know, physician, us as patients, and seeking that care that we need without being inhibited and without feeling like we were harmed in the process.
And thank you again, Melissa, for sharing your story. And I want to pivot the conversation and would like to introduce my next guest this hour, Alex Sanchez, Chief Experience Officer of BeWell&M, a statewide marketplace for those who no longer are eligible for Medicaid. They help customers compare health insurance plans and enroll in no or low cost plans. Thanks for joining us, Alex.
Thanks so much for having me, Taylor.
And about 8% of the state's population is uninsured, whether they've had similar experiences to Melissa where they're not trusting medical facilities right now, but we've heard this morning that insurance companies can play a very important role in pricing negotiations. Can you talk a little bit more about how BeWell&M could close this gap by getting more people insured?
Absolutely. And thank you so much for sharing your story, Melissa. I think the point you hit on just now is so important about going back for care, because what we see is when a New Mexican doesn't have care, they don't seek preventative care services. They don't have those annual exams. They're trying to avoid getting a bill. And unfortunately, in a lot of times, it means they end up in the emergency room with quite complex medical issues that need to be addressed, and they're going to get a hefty bill, right? So the thing about BeWell is we are the state's marketplace, and we are the only place where you can qualify for subsidies to reduce the cost of monthly insurance payments. So anyone who's 200% of the federal poverty level or below can enroll anytime throughout the year. If you are Native American, you can enroll anytime throughout the year. But up to 400% of the federal poverty level, there are subsidies that can be applied to your account. So actually, we have a pretty good percentage here of New Mexicans who are paying $0 a month. In fact, 40% of our clients pay $0 a month for health insurance. And these are names you know and trust. It's Presbyterian, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Molina, United. We offer dental health care on the exchange. So our biggest concern is making sure New Mexicans know we're here for you. You know, if you just lost your job, if you just lost Medicaid, you may have the assumption, oh, private insurance is gonna be too expensive for me. Please come in, let's talk. We wanna meet you where you wanna meet us. We'll chat you on our website, bewellnm.com. You can call 833-2-BE-WELL. You can come to any of our events. You can come to our office in Albuquerque at 7601 Jefferson Northeast. We will meet you where you wanna meet us. We have bilingual speakers. We have Native American enrollment counselors. We're ready to address your needs, what's going to work for you and your family financially, medically, if you have a provider you want to continue seeing. So we really encourage New Mexicans to come see. And you may be surprised that you may not have a very high bill for health insurance monthly.
And I think for maybe many people listening, hearing that the barriers of care could be eliminated a little bit is comforting. So what is the process for qualifying for those subsidies that you mentioned to lower those monthly payments?
Yeah, so what really starts the process is New Mexico is the only state with a standardized application. So what that means is if you come into us and you fill out the application and it looks like you're going to be Medicaid eligible, we have a great partnership with our friends, used to be HSD, now Healthcare Authority. That application goes right over to them. It's a streamlined application process. Same thing. You go try and apply for Medicaid and you don't qualify, you're going to come over to us. We already have your application. So from there, there's different considerations. Household size, your income, are there people in the household who are not going to be on the plan? There's all kinds of different variants. And again, if you're Native American, there's Native American premium assistance. The state has really been supportive of making sure New Mexicans get health care. So there's state subsidies, there's federal subsidies, there's cost reductions that are kind of on the back end, and consumers don't even know that's happening. So there's a lot of factors. And I think that sometimes, number one, signing up for health insurance can be confusing, right? Just in general, like where clinic do I go to? What doctor am I going to have? But number two, trying to figure out, well, how much am I going to pay? This is where we can help you for free. Our services are completely free. Come in, let's talk to you. Let's see what subsidies you may qualify for. And let's get you on a plan that's going to work for you and address your medical needs. We don't want you ending up in the ER with significant medical conditions that we could have prevented with preventative care.
And we actually had a listener call in who couldn't stay on the line, but she said there was a code error on her bill and the hospital wasn't really helpful in fixing it. It resulted in a bill for a wellness check that she wasn't sure was correct. And she asked, where would someone go for help in this kind of situation? I think, Erica, what are your thoughts on her situation in general?
So, like Melissa said in her story, it can be a lot of back and forth and calling a lot of different numbers, and it can be very frustrating. But she should probably start with calling the phone numbers on her bill. But if she has difficulty getting through, I think that the Office of the Superintendent of Insurance is always a resource when there are some of these billing issues or conflicts with insurance companies. So I recommend that she check their website. They have some consumer information there and different ways to file complaints and get some more information.
And Alex, I want to go back to you for a second. I know we've talked about uninsured people getting insurance through BeWell&M, but I'm wondering, is BeWell&M a place where people can go who maybe want supplemental insurance, since I know people with Medicaid or any other private insurance may be still walking away with those massive bills? So how do you know where to send people if they're looking for supplemental insurance?
Yeah, so BeWell&M is the place after you don't qualify for Medicaid or Medicare. Really, the only time that I would say it's not supplemental, it's complementary, is in our Native American communities. So BeWell&M supplemental insurance complements IHS and tribal health care services. So it really provides those communities to keep the dollars there in their clinic and an outlet for Native Americans who, you know, maybe you're visiting some other place and you're hiking and something happens, God forbid, and you need to go see the clinic. That BeWell insurance then kicks in, right? and we can help complement the IHS services. But it is for once you have been found ineligible for Medicaid or Medicare. So we couldn't supplement those options.
And I would like to introduce my last guest this hour, Heather Korbulik, Vice President of Policy and Communications at Get Insured. Good morning, Heather. Thanks for coming on the show.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
And for those who are unfamiliar with Get Insured, can you just give us a rundown of the work you all do?
Sure. So prior to joining Get Insured, I actually ran the Nevada Health Insurance Exchange, and then I spent a little bit of time at Be Well New Mexico helping with their leadership for a bit. And with Get Insured, we are the leading vendor for exchange technology and call center services. So health insurance marketplaces like Be Well leverage our technology to help provide consumers with a real Amazon-like experience, a simplified e-commerce experience to get access to an understandable and affordable health insurance.
And Heather, Get Insured has erased more than $11.7 million of debt, medical debt, across the country. How will this impact New Mexico? What are your plans specifically when it comes to New Mexicans?
That's right. Thanks for pointing that out. So we have a partnership with an organization called Undo Medical Debt. And they are doing work across the country that has actually kind of picked up a lot of momentum with Congress, and many governors across the country are engaging in using public funds to eliminate and buy down medical debt for their constituents. Just yesterday, New Jersey's governor allocated $10.5 million of their general fund budget to buy medical debt. So what Undo Medical Debt does is it buys medical debt for pennies on the dollar. And so kind of aligning with Governor Lujan Grisham's goals in this health policy space to not only make sure people find their way to services like Be Well and to the New Mexico Health Authority, where they can get low cost or no cost plans, we also want to help the state, you know, with our partnership with Be Well, to find a way to eliminate that debt, to get people to a level playing field where they can get access and get out from under it. So we're currently working with Undo in the state of New Mexico, and we will be eliminating at least $2 million worth of medical debt in the state.
And I think one of the major takeaways that we've heard so far this morning is that medical debt can be extremely overwhelming. It can really hinder someone's perspective of the medical care in the country, in the state, their local city where they're living. But Heather, how have you seen the erasure of medical debt correlate with people seeking more or new medical treatment?
I think probably the biggest symptom of people experiencing medical debt is that they simply do not go and access care. And whether it's a festering chronic condition that needs medical intervention and they're just afraid because they're already so in debt and they're afraid of getting help, and that actually, I mean, when you think about it strictly from an economic lens, that doesn't actually do anything good for our economy in either a state or in the federal landscape. What that does is compound an issue. If you can't get early preventative care, then you're compounding your negative health consequences and ending up really in an emergency situation, which is far more expensive. And so really kind of helping people get access to affordable insurance and then making sure that they don't experience like long-term debilitating medical debt that bankrupts them. I mean, I've seen people not send their children to college because they're so underwater. Governor Walz from Minnesota was speaking last night about how his own family was nearly debilitated from his mother's medical bills and what that felt like for them. And I think what we're seeing with Congress is some real activity where they know that that debt is preventing people from getting other loans. It's affecting their credit. And so at the very least, we may see some activity to kind of restrict medical debt from holding people back from getting access to other kind of financial assistance.
And Heather, how can our listeners who are listening to this conversation who may be intrigued, how do they get their debt erased with Get Insured? I mean, what's that process looking like now?
Well, so I would encourage you to visit the Undo Medical Debt webpage, and they have different links to services throughout the country that can help eliminate that. Sounds like Erica and her group have lots of accesses and or access to programs in the state that help can also help eliminate medical debt.
And Alex, so far this morning, we've heard the expense of healthcare, some of the obstacles of being uninsured, but it sounds like not having health insurance, being in medical debt, really impacts everyone's life holistically. So how do programs like Be Well and M start closing the gaps to healthcare and looking towards the future of a healthier New Mexico?
Yeah, I just want to say we are so lucky to have a partnership with Get Insured, who really cares about our community and where they're establishing roots, because this is a major announcement this morning, right, about this buy. But it all goes back to the foundational thing we want to see at Be Well and M, which is people confident, happy, trying new things, starting a business. And you can do all those things when you feel secure. You feel secure you have health insurance. You feel secure you don't have a large bill, or what's going to happen if you have to go to the emergency room. And so that's where we want to meet people where they're at. We will have events all through open enrollment, which is November 1st through January 15th. We have educational opportunities now. Come listen and learn. You don't have to meet us in person. We'd love to shake your hand and talk to you. You can join us on our Zoom sessions that happen weekly. But we really want people to know this is an opportunity to at least come learn. And we know a lot of our customers, they need a couple interactions before they're ready to enroll. It can be a complex process, right? You have to get your income information. You have to get all these different things together. So come and learn, start the journey, start getting that flat footing so that we can see you go on to amazing things. Be Well wants to be part of your journey of continuing to be successful.
And Pamela, I would like to come back to you with kind of a final thought kind of question. It seems like medical pricing and the system in the U.S. is something that everyone finds confusing, and it does have real implications on people's well-being. Would the Hospital Association advocate against upending the current model to create something more equitable, or maybe a uniform nationwide law? What would you like to see?
The example of the conversations that we're having right here is key. Our getting to work with Center for Law and Poverty a bit on the Debt Collection Act, that really helped, having a feedback loop, because we don't know if patients leave and we don't have their information, we don't know what happens to them. And it's not because hospitals don't care. It's just there's no other way to track them. So creating these continual feedback loops, working with Be Well and others to help simplify this process. I don't know that New Mexico has the leverage to change the entire system. We're a small state, but I think we can work together to make it more aligned, more uniform, and support the patients and also the providers, the doctors and nurses that are there for their patients. We don't want them to be frustrated by the process either. That doesn't help them give better care either. So I think this is an exceptional opportunity for us to build on this good work that's being done, that everyone here has done, and that our patient here in Melissa, patient and provider, has been a really good example of where we need to go from here.
And Alex, I actually want to close with you as well. I know you mentioned there's some things coming up in the future for Be Well and M through open enrollment. So do you have anything to close us out with for this hour?
Yeah, I have all the things. So again, we can meet you where you want to meet us. If you are under 200% of the federal poverty level, you can check those levels on our website, bewellatm.com. You can enroll anytime. You don't need to wait till November 1st, my friend. We would love to see you and get you enrolled. If you are Native American, same thing. We'd love to see you help supplement and complement your IHS coverage. And then for those who are ready for open enrollment, window shopping, as we call it, begins October 1st. Get on the website. Call 833-2-BE-WELL. Make an appointment with an assister for free. Check out the plans ahead of time. So on November 1st, boom, you're ready to go. Let's get you insured. Let's get your payment in so that starting off 2025, you're doing that confidently, knowing you've got health insurance. You're ready to go to be a healthier, happier, more secure person.
And there's that closing music, and means that that's all the time we have today. Thanks to everyone who called and emailed to share your thoughts. And thank you so much to our guests, Melissa Barbara, Pamela Blackwell, Erica Sanchez, Alex Sanchez, and Heather Corbalt-Bulick for joining us. This show was made possible by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation and KUNM listeners like you. Let's keep the conversation going. Search KUNM Radio to comment on Facebook, KUNM News on Instagram, or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. If you missed part of the show, you can stream it on our website or subscribe to our podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Our engineer this morning was Marina Spencer. Mia Casa screened your calls. Kaveh Movahed produced the show today. And next week, we'll be talking about strategies to address public safety and the growing violence. I'm Taylor Velasquez. This is KUNM on 89.9 KUNM.